Good morning and welcome to the 7 a.m. Eastern Time Overeaters Anonymous, A Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Amy G. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Maryland. Today's date is Thursday, August 8th, 2024, and today we are reading in the Big Book in the chapter More About Alcoholism, and we are on page 37, the fourth paragraph, starting with Our Behavior is as absurd. Through the next page to the end of that paragraph, breaks both legs, focusing on that one paragraph only. Today's readers are, and thank you so much to Team Thursday, Julie B, Martha Z, Elena C, on the 12 steps, Jen P, on the 12 traditions, Karen W, our newcomer greeter, Susan S.H., and our host for the second awesome unrecorded hour, Ken W.H. Thank you, everyone, for your service. The reference numbers for yesterday, Wednesday, August 7th, 7 a.m., 21,638. At a 10 a.m. meeting yesterday, 21,639. OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask for Jen P. to read the 12 steps. Please go ahead, Jen.
Thank you. Good morning, Amy. This is Jen, a recovering compulsive overeater from New Jersey. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Step 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you so much, Jen P. I will now ask for Karen W. to read the 12 traditions. Please go ahead, Karen.
Good morning. This is Karen W. from Katy, Texas, compulsive overeater. 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks for allowing me to be of service, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Karen. All righty, how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. If you go over, you'll hear me say time or hear the beeper in the background. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only, please. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. Again, this meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today we resume our study in the Big Book and more about alcoholism on page 37, the fourth paragraph. And I am going to ask Julie B. to begin reading. Let's get rolling, Julie. Looking forward.
Good morning, Julie B. from Akron. Our behavior is as absurd and incomprehensible with respect to the first drink than as that of an individual with a passion, say, for jaywalking. He gets a thrill out of skipping in front of fast-moving vehicles. He enjoys himself for a few years in spite of friendly warnings. Up to this point, you would label him as a foolish chap having queer ideas of fun. Luck then deserts him and he is slightly injured several times in succession. You would expect him, if he were normal, to cut it out. Presently, he is hit again and this time has a fractured skull. Within a week after leaving the hospital, a fast-moving trolley car breaks his arm. He tells you he's decided to stop jaywalking for good, but in a few weeks, he breaks both legs. I can't wait to share. Okay, so again, Julie B., I'm from Akron. I'll set my alarm. Grateful to be just to be on this meeting. So, yeah, like, how does this relate? Does this relate? I like food. I'm eating. Like, what do I do? Like, how am I a jaywalker? So, and breaking this down and just replacing the first drink and jaywalking with impulsive overeating and the first bite of something that is an allergic food. It's an alcoholic food to me. So for me, I would get that thrill of going to a drive-thru, getting that food that I know I've sworn off and said I would never get again, and yet 2 hours later, I'm headed there, and that's thrilling to me. A thrill of eating at restaurants and telling the waiter to bring, you know, go ahead and bring another one of those, or, oh, not, I wasn't gonna do this today, but oh, I was good, or I had a good meeting, and now I'm gonna reward myself, or I'm having a bad day. That was another one too. So the injury comes in with the injury in going up in pant sizes, being 50 pounds heavier than I am currently in a healthy body weight. The injury of the countless, every single diet scheme that was around and available for the course of 20 years, just being on countless different ways of trying to curb this jaywalking. The money that I've spent, the injury to my pocketbook, the injury of debting, the money at restaurants and of fads, and also of the injury in relationships, the canceled plans, the last minute, I can't go, you know, so sorry, but because I don't fit that already, like, large dress that's in my closet, you know, drawing the curtains and having my life just kind of pass around me. And not even to mention the jobs that I've skipped out on or did not a poor job on because I was too busy eating a long lunch or not going to the meeting because I was in my home. And people would say, well, and people close to me, why don't you just stop? Like, why don't you just have those two pieces of that? Like, homegirl can't stop. Like, that's what this program has made me realize, is that I cannot stop by myself. So because of basically living on my knees in a humbled position to my creator, admitting that I'm powerless and praying to God, my higher power, I was given the gift. Abstinence is a gift, and I have to ask for it and be thankful for it and pray for it. And with that, I will pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Julie B., for getting us started. Okay.
Okay.
Good old jaywalker. Now, although we love to hear from everyone, we do ask that if you've shared in the last couple of days, namely Wednesday or Tuesday, if you could please step aside and allow others to share their experience, strength, and hope as well. So if you give me your first name, the initial of your last name, we can get going. Who would like to share?
Rivka R. from Baltimore.
Liz E. UK.
Melissa C.
E.
Karen K. Syracuse.
Melissa C. Karen K. Anyone else?
Liz E. for Elegant UK.
Liz, I got you.
Paige C.
Paige?
Lynn Renee.
Was it Paige? I think I got it.
Natalie
who
M.
From Canada?
Lynn Renee from okay. Montreal.
I got Natalie, but I missed the Montreal. I got Montreal, but I didn't get your first name. I'm sorry. Try again.
It's Lynn Renee H.
Lynn Renee. Okay. And when you go, if you could turn up your volume a little bit, that would be great, Lynn. Thank you. All right. So we have got Rivka R., Liz E., Melissa C., Karen K., Paige C., I think. Natalie, I didn't get your initial. You can give that to me when you share. Lynn Renee H. Anyone else? Okay, we've got a great group. Let's get started. Rivka R.
Charles H.
Ahead. Okay, Charles, I got you. All right, let's go ahead. Rivka. Rivka, press star one to get started.
Okay, good morning. Yeah, I thought I was unmuted
before.
Okay, thanks. Good morning, everyone. Driska R., gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in Baltimore. And thank you, Amy, for your service, and ditto with the opening share. I absolutely love the story about the jaywalker. I mean, nothing was as important as getting my fix at the moment. No value, no relationship, no goal, no consequence, no event. I mean, there was no other priority than getting my fix. And, like, it's absolutely dehumanizing. Of course, I didn't see it at the time, how dehumanizing it was, but, like, the thrill of the food, like, obliterated the consciousness of everything else. I've binged before an important event and not been able to show up the way I wanted to. I certainly put food before my dear husband, you know, once he said, you know, if you eat sugar again, I'm going to take up skydiving. Like, if you put your life at risk, like, I'm also going to put my life at risk. Well, I'm just a little codependent, but he was desperate to stop me. I certainly put food before my kids, you know, locking myself in my bedroom and binging while, you know, letting them play by themselves, and they were young. My son, you know, young son tripping on the, you know, and falling on the way to the house carrying a package of ice cream, and the first thing out of my mouth is, you know, how's the ice cream? Like, you know, I had to be rewired to recover. And I just want to say to the newcomer, it is possible. It's really possible. It does take admitting, you know, that nothing's going to change in my life, the way I'm going, and I'm powerless to change it. And it takes surrender, but, like, the life we're given is so worth it. Like, no fix is as important as my relationship with God today. Like, what? That's, like, wild. And in that relationship, my eyes opened up to, like, the value of life more than the next fix. And what's so beautiful is that, like, in valuing what's really important in life, I become important and valuable. And I couldn't do this without the program and 12 steps and all of you. And so thank you so much for being there, and have a blessed day. Pass.
Thank you so much, Rivka R., Baltimore, Maryland. Okay, Liz E. for Elegant in the UK. It's your turn. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you to everybody for your service. Liz E. for Elegant in Bristol, Southwest England, UK. And if you haven't done star one for a while or never, just do it. I don't know what I'm going to say. I've asked God to speak through me. But it really helps your recovery and your journey. This paragraph, as with every single paragraph, is amazing. And this is about my behavior, our behavior. And that's what this program is about, has taught me, that I'm learning what are my behaviors that, you know, press the effort button, push people away, make me uncomfortable, make me unhappy, make me restless, irritable, discontent. And a lot of my behavior is absurd and incomprehensible. And people around me just don't understand it. Fortunately, that is less today. But if I go into self-will, I do find myself with absurd and incomprehensible behavior. So with regard to the first drink, I mean, I did that for years. And I was getting a thrill. I was seeking an effect. But today I know that I have this twist of the mind, and the only solution is to work this program. And the most important thing is my relationship with God and higher power. That is the only treatment I can take today. And I did this, jumping in front of fast moving vehicles. I put myself at risk. I ended up in intensive care because a crazy diet I did, because I had to have an operation that went really badly wrong. I had to go back to theatre, and I woke up in intensive care, and I had a 3-year-old child at home. How crazy is that? Because it was my behaviour that put me into intensive care. Okay, the surgeon messed up, but in the first place, I shouldn't have ever needed the operation. It was my crazy, incomprehensible behavior that did it. And I went, and when I was in intensive care, the first thing I could think of when I woke up is, how am I going to get to the chocolate vending machine in the hospital? How quickly can I get there to get chocolate? Again, I was going back out doing that jaywalking again and again and again. Anyway, love outreach, and thanks a million for listening and your time. I'll leave it there. Pass. Bye.
Thank you, Liz. Liz E. from the UK. Melissa C., you're up, followed by Karen K. Go ahead, Melissa.
Yeah, hey, good morning, Amy. Thanks so much for your service. My name is Melissa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I'm from New York, but I've been vacationing. I'm down at the Jersey Shore, and, you know, I'm thinking about the jaywalk, and there's so much in there that I can relate to. Especially, you know, I've been on vacation a lot this summer. I went to Vegas, which is like, you know, the land of decadence, and stayed at friends' houses, and now here I'm at the shore. And, you know, if ever there's, you know, food surrounding me with all these reasons, this foolish idea of what fun would look like, it's vacation. I mean, vacation is food abundance, intensive time with family. And I'm also like right in the midst of, you know, my mom was moved into a living facility, and there's some big adjustments. And, you know, all of these things and for me would be a perfect storm brewing to go to the food. Because, you know, when I read this paragraph, I've got a queer idea about fun. I've got something, you know, catastrophic and self-destructive about what I consider fun. And it's not the way that everybody here is eating on the boardwalk. Like all the people I'm with, the amount of food that's left over from their trying everything on the boardwalk astounds me. I never eat that way. In fact, you know, most of the thrill of my binge was in the preparation of it. Nothing would so much as get me through a hard day as the knowledge about what was waiting for me at home. And I don't know that normal people experience food that way. They also have a queer idea about fun because, you know, it really is not fun for me. Even in the throes of my disease, that was the lie I told myself, because it's not fun eating in a bathroom. And it's not fun eating in a car, food that's meant to be, you know, eaten at a table. And the other thing in that paragraph that grabs me is this, you know, that he breaks his leg again. You know, in the throes of my addiction, I tried to the treadmill to burn off calories, and I actually broke my leg, I injured my leg, had doctor give me steroids and boot me, and I binged, and I got right back on the treadmill and rebroke it. And so that is a crazy, what it tells me is I am not normal. Therefore, my solution is not normal. It's not moderation. It's not have a bite. It's the relationship with a power greater than myself so that I can vacation and I can go through difficult life changes with family. And I'm grateful to know that, and grateful to have the solution today. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Melissa C. from New York. Okay. Karen K., you're up, followed by Paige C. Please go ahead, Karen.
Good morning, and thank you for your service. My name is Karen K., recovered compulsive eater from Syracuse, New York, and my credits don't transfer. You know, before I came into program, you know, I would try so many different things that seemed to be okay for other people. The same thing, you know, like running in fast moving cars, you know, trying, you know, all these different things. And we all have a list, and my list is not important. But thinking, you know, it was going to be okay. It was going to work this time. And only to hurt myself later, whether emotionally, spiritually, physically, because it's not, the specifics are just not important. All I know is it was just said before, it wasn't fun, you know, and I shared the other day about, you know, poor Jim and his story, you know, the veil of denial wasn't lifted for him because he didn't have a psychic change. And they're trying to stress this in this paragraph about, you know, I thought people were going to get me sober in any program I was in. I thought if I read the big book enough, it would keep me sober. I thought if I went to enough vision meetings, it would get me sober. Enough podcasts would get me sober. I had to fire the liar and hire God. Anytime I negotiate with this disease, like running in fast-moving cars, the disease will always win. A real quick example, I was in the store, and I was going to pick up a fruit that I know it was like automatic, and I was like, whoa, Nellie, no, don't, that you're a liar, and I said that to the piece of fruit, to the pineapple in the store, I go, you're a liar, and people looked at me, I guess I was quite vocal, and I just kind of smiled with my cart, and I walked away, because I'm safe and protected, and I'm just so grateful now for this moment. I think sometimes we get caught up in time, how much time we have away from a drink or away, you know, the substance. And you caught up, you know, this gift is so fragile, but God keeps it strong and having that connection. And, you know, if you don't have that connection, just keep coming back and knowing that the higher power of your understanding will set you free just like it set me free. A sick woman like me set me free. Take care and God bless. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Karen K. from Syracuse, New York. Paige C., you're up, followed by Natalie. Paige, please go ahead.
Hi, I'm Paige C. from outside of Philly. I'm new to A Vision for You, and I've been coming to OA for a little over a year now, and I'm very much so still in step one, and, you know, like, I'll have my, like, thank God for a program of action and really strict sponsorship. I know for me, I need a strict program, and time and time again, I will take my will back and think that I can go out to a restaurant and eat, and every single time, it proves to me that I right now I cannot deviate from my food plan. I cannot go out to eat. It sets something off in me, and you know, like I, at times I don't feel like I've made a lot of progress in this program in the year that I've been in it. But when I look back to where I was when I first came in, the progress is actually like pretty profound. And I'm also a member of another 12-step fellowship, and like for me, this is way more deeply rooted than the drugs and the alcohol were, and I'm becoming really grateful for it, because this work is so deep and it's so good, and you know, like I do believe that I will find the freedom from this. And I get my daughter every other weekend, and it seems like I'll do really good when I don't have her, and then on the weekends that I have her, I tend to really struggle. And this past weekend, I went off the rails the worst than I have in a while. But then since Monday, I've been great, and I've followed my meal plan every single day this week. And I mean, even like the obsession for the food hasn't even been there this week. And I don't know. I'm gonna hold on to the feeling that I'm in, and continuously thank my higher power that I am in a really good spot, and for removing this obsession from me and keeping me on my food plan this week. And this is my first week that I've been coming to A Vision for You. So It's a nice way to get my day started and pop my headphones in while I'm at work. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Paige C. from Philly, PA. Welcome. Glad to have you. Okay, so just a friendly reminder before we go ahead. We are on page 37. We are in the chapter More About Alcoholism. We are on the fourth paragraph, starting with Our Behavior is Absurd. Going through that one paragraph ends in Breaks Both Legs. And we're going to move ahead with Natalie. And Natalie, can I get your initial, please, too, of your last name?
Sure. This is Natalie M. from California. Good morning,
Great.
Everyone.
Thanks, Natalie.
You're welcome. Yes, the jaywalking for me was sugar. And when I came into program, it took me about 18 months to get off sugar. It was like a month and then getting a little chip and then falling off. And then 3 months and then getting my chip and falling off. And I remember going to meetings and looking at people who were getting their one-year chip and thinking, that's impossible. How do they do that? People who had been there for more than a year, or that the book said, you know, this is a lifetime program, that was inconceivable. I couldn't get together any back-to-back abstinence with the sugar. But when I finally did, after, you know, 3 months falling off and then working it back up and getting 6 months, and then I got that year chip, and I started to have hope. And by the time I got to 18 months, I was convinced that this is something I don't want to go back to. But I wanted to add on to what the first speaker said. It was all through, you know, once I got started to get abstinent from sugar, I would get on my knees and thank God, like so grateful. And when I got back up off my knees, that was the interesting part for me, is that I was strengthened, got off my knees, and all of a sudden I have this power that I'm not alone, and I'm full. I'm not so needy or empty, or I need something. I need the sugar. Something needs to, you know, to love me, whatever it was, that lack. I was able to get back up and know that I'm not alone, and I've got strength that's beyond the strength I have, for sure, and move forward, and so grateful. I mean, I asked, like the first speaker said, I asked for abstinence every day on my knees, and I thank God it's been 20 years and I'm abstinent and free, no longer a slave to the food, no longer doing foolish things like the jaywalker. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Natalie M. from California. All right, we have Lynn Renee, followed by Charles H., and then we'll take some more names. Go ahead, Lynn Renee.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lynn Renee H. from Montreal, Canada. And oh, my God, I am so grateful for Dr. Young, psychiatrist. For me, like, the psychiatrist is the one who kind of know how the brain works. And he's the one who said to get to this program and having the liberty and peace of mind, we alcoholics are overeaters or undereaters or need a psychic change. And because I believe that, like, I can't tell you how much I believe that, because I've been believing since I've been 16 and now I'm 51 that if I do a diet, I will go down in weight and stay there at that magical weight that's going to make me happy. And I'm 51, and I've, with everything I've done, I've never went under 200 pounds. So I did lap bands. I did over-exercising, eating shakes for 4 years. I did so much jaywalking. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And all of those crazy ideas. I'm always watching myself for that. I have this great idea. Yeah. The great idea brings me to hell. And the thing is that's weird. And that's where I really believe that this disease is a mental disease. It's because I'm able to really trust my thinking like it's reality. And the reality for me is that I'm going to do better. I'm going to be healthy. I'm going to be joyous, free, serene. And in fact, the proof that it's the complete opposite. Complete opposite. I just want to die. I just don't want to be with people. I isolate myself. And the more I isolate myself, my inner soul is dying. And that's why, for me, one of the precious things in this, really, like the jaywalking story, is that I need somebody else to help me see what's the truth, because I can't see it. And that's why I'm so grateful for fellows that are in the program and gone, and me and loving actions. I need loving actions also. It's not just by praying that magically it's going to come up and it's going to change. There's no magic in this program. It's all miracles. And for miracles for me, I need to work for them in a different way than a food plan. Not a food plan, but a diet, sorry. And I'm so grateful for the first time it's been through, and I'm wrapping up. For the first time in all my years of being on this planet, I'm finally changing my way of thinking about a food plan, a food diet, just eating, period. So for that, I'm so grateful. Thank you for all your service and have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Lynn Renee H. from Montreal, Canada. Okay, so we have Charles H., and then we're going to take some more names. Go ahead, Charles.
Thank you very much, Amy G., for your service. There are many situations which arise out of the phenomenon of craving, which cause men to make the supreme sacrifice rather than continue to fight. The joke was, I thought it was my fight, and it's not my fight. And that is the addiction for me, trying to fight this thing alone with millions of recovered people, trying to fight this thing alone in Vision for You. I was a walking dead. You know, the phenomenon of craving had me wrapped up, and for me, sharing every day and acting like I got good advice for people, right? The classification of alcoholics seems most difficult and in much detail is outside the scope of this book. There are, of course, the psychopaths who are emotionally unstable. That's how unstable I was. We are familiar with this type. They are always going on the wagons for keep. They are over-remorseful and make many resolutions, but never a decision. So making a decision, as we heard so many times, should take less than 3 seconds. But, you know, making a resolution took my whole damn life. I'm like, New Year's Eve, I'm never going to do this. But by the time Valentine's Day comes, I'm like, sweet for my sweet and a candy for my baby, right? Like, so like, you know, I make a decision every single day, right? And to not make this my fight. And my man last week, I don't know his name and I don't be name dropping, but he said something so profound. And I'll close with this. I know there's a lot of people that want to say something. You know, when I stop trying to stop, that's when I stop, because I don't have to fight, because it ain't my fight no more. It's my higher power's fight, and he fight that thing right. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Charles H., New York. All right. So just to remind everyone, we are on page 37 in the chapter More About Alcoholism, on paragraph. So who would like to share on what was read?
Anita J.
Julie M.
Julie M.
Buffalo.
Nicole. Ginny B. And I think I heard a Nicole. And then who was the gentleman I missed?
I said Victor B. I don't know if you heard me.
I did.
Victor B.
From Buffalo. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, gotcha.
Melinda.
All right. Melinda, I miss you too. Sorry. All right, Melinda. What's your initial last name?
H as in horse in Virginia.
H. Yes, and there are many horses in Virginia. Okay, let's see. We've got Anita J, Julie M, Ginny B, Nicole, I need to get your initial, Victor B, Melinda H. I think that's going to do us. Melinda, hopefully we'll have enough time for you. All right, let's go ahead. Anita, you're up.
Thank you. Thank you. This is Anita J from west of Boston, Westboro, to be exact. What really hit me today was the progression. And for years, I couldn't understand or relate to the jaywalker. It just seemed so ridiculous. And now I think, if it's ridiculous, then kid, you're ridiculous. Because when it was a small problem, if you're going by weight, a small problem, you never took it seriously. You always thought, you know, one more, you know, I'll just do away with this. And for a while I could, but I couldn't. For years I couldn't. And still I would think, but I'm not as bad as. And they tell you, do not identify. Don't compare. Identify. But I was identifying out. I'm not that bad. I'm not that bad. My mind was much bigger than I was, although I was pretty well over 200, getting shorter every year, too. So it's not fun. It's not fun to masquerade. How are you today? Oh, I'm great. I'm great, I say, with pain inside me. Reality wasn't part of my scenario. I'm just so grateful that it's been about 10, it's over 10 and a half years now, after decades, that I know the problem is and that I can't fix it. Get that God that you go to worship on Sundays. Bring him in. Bring him well within. And you'll never be alone anymore. And he'll help you. And it's, my God, it's true. So thank you very much. And this is the meeting. This is the in crowd here, which I always wanted to be part of. I pass.
Thank you so much. That's right. The in crowd. I love it. All right. Anita J. Boston, Massachusetts. Okay. Julie M., you're up, followed by Ginny B. Go ahead, Julie.
Good morning. My name is Julie M. from upstate New York. Thank you for everybody on the line and all the messages I've received this morning. You know, for me, I need to keep it green every day. You know, when I make my decision every morning with step three to continue with the program, all I have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And so, you know, the practice of 11 step and giving back what was freely given to me is truly important. And, you know, I was once at an OA retreat years ago, and I had an idea. I was going to go buy a filing cabinet so that my husband can put all his junk food in there. And so that I didn't have a desire to eat. And I thought that would be the answer, right? So then I would have periods of abstinence, periods of binging, you know. So I would say, can you please go open the filing cabinet to see what I can grab from the filing cabinet today, you know? And that's how life was, you know. I purchased this filing cabinet for him to put his junk food in. And when I took my will back, I was in the food again. Now, I have also done other insane things with food. But, you know, it's not about the food-a-log or the drunk-a-log. It's really about what I do today, you know. And so today, helping others, praying, meditating, being of service in all areas of my life, whether I like it or not, you know, making these outreach phone calls, you know, having sponsees call early in the morning, working with them. And, you know, one of my sponsees asked me a question this morning. How do you know when you are done this time? Because I've been in the rooms of OA for 17 years, and it's only been, you know, 14 or 15 months that I've had back-to-back abstinence. And I said, I didn't know. I don't know. Right. So for today, it's a surrender that I do every single day and a decision with God's help to move on in program. So thank you for allowing me to share this morning. I wish everyone an abstinent day. Julie M., Upstate New York. Bye.
Thank you, Julie M. from Upstate New York. Okay, Ginny B., followed by Nicole. Go ahead, Ginny.
Good morning. This is Jeannie B. from Florida, recovered. I am sick, and I'm sure that's why I'm so emotional, but when I first read this paragraph with you all this morning, I started crying because my behavior is absurd and it's incomprehensible with respect to the first bite. I tried to pretend like, okay, well, if I eat healthy the rest of the time, I got like uber healthy the rest of the time, then my binges were just like something I could live with and something that was, I mean, I absolutely had no idea there was any solution. And believe me, if you had told me abstinence was the solution, that was a non-starter anyway. So it's not like if anybody had approached me, it would have made any difference. But when I think about this very first sentence, it's absurd and incomprehensible with respect to the first drink as that of an individual with a passion, say for jaywalking. For me, my passion was, you know, I didn't think of it as a passion, but my obsession was my food. My focus was food. Any occasion, what are we going to eat? What's the food? Potluck. Excuse to binge. Friday, excuse to binge. Stressed out, excuse to binge. Happy, celebratory, excuse to binge. Birthday, excuse to binge. It didn't matter. I had this passion, meaning I take that to mean focus. My obsession was my binging, my food, and it robbed me. I didn't know I was robbing myself. I take responsibility. I was robbing myself of so much life, so much connection and enjoyment of occasions and other people. And even 2+ years in, I'm like 2 years, 4 months into this, and I still am getting used to, okay, now that I don't do this, how can I enjoy the occasion? How can I switch? How can I be now? It's still an adjustment, and I'm happy to make it. And now hearing the newcomer voices is so nice, because here I am, freaking sick as hell. And I don't even think about like a binge, where before sickness and binge went hand in hand. It was one more excuse I gave myself to like comfort myself. At least you have this. At least you can give yourself that, which of course is ridiculous, because eating like crap the way I did and binging on sugar and desserts just made my illness longer and just made my body's immune system weaker. So what the hell was I doing? You know, nothing that made any sense, nothing comprehensible, nothing but absurd was I with the food. So thank you very much. Thank you for everyone who does service on this meeting, and I will pass.
Thank you so much, Ginny B. from Florida. Okay, Nicole, you're up, followed by Victor. Go ahead, and forgive me on the timer. Your time is not up. Just get started.
Hi, this is Nicole S. from Colorado. Thank you, Amy, for your service. And you know where he says he enjoyed himself for a few years in spite of Sunday mornings. And I remember early on in the food, it was enjoyable. You know, I would, you know, abuse food and plan ways of overeating and have some enjoyment in it. I had some enjoyment then, you know, after overeating and dieting and restricting. And then, you know, until I just kept wiring that pathway in my mind that food equals ease and comfort anytime. And then it took on a whole new personality of its own. Like Bill said, you know, liquor ceased to be a luxury. It became a necessity. And then, you know, I had to eat. And where it says, you know, you would expect him if he were normal to cut it out. And I have to remember that I am not normal where food is concerned. I will never be normal. And, you know, I crossed that bridge and it burned behind me. I can never get back to the other side. And, you know, I'm abnormal. And for my step one, I had to accept that. And I still have to just accept that, you know, if I was normal, I would be able to quit. And it's only through my relationship with God and letting, you know, giving my will and my life over to my higher power that he gives me the strength, you know, a day at a time, sometimes a moment at a time. And even if I take my will back, which I do countless times every day, but it's constantly turning that over through these steps, through, you know, steps 10, steps 11, and constantly reminding myself, yeah, I'm not normal. And I'm so grateful that there is this fellowship. There's the steps. There's this book that has very clear-cut directions of how we can be recovered, not cured, but recovered. And I'm just incredibly grateful. And I thank you, everybody, for your service. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Nicole S. from Colorado. And we have Victor and Melinda. If you guys want to split the time, like 2 minutes to 2 minutes, we should be able to get you both in. Victor, please go ahead.
Hi, everybody. My name is Victor, Victor B., and it's really good to hear some other people, Buffalonians and upstate New York people, but it's good to hear all of you. Yeah, I just wanted to share how defiant and obstinate and how much, like, contempt I have prior to investigating, because I could wrap my head around, you know, I could identify with the alcoholic, you know, being incomprehensible, you know, absurd, and addicts being absurd and incomprehensible watching their behavior. I could get with that, you know. I could think people have some foolish ways of having fun blowing up their life with drugs and alcohol, you know. And going back down to the piece where it says they were normal, you know, I could, you know, relate to that and have some empathy for alcoholic and drug addicts. They were normal. They ought to cut it out, you know. What's wrong with them? And but then internalizing it, I had so much contempt, you know, and biases that I was like, how, I mean, this is ridiculous. Overeaters reading AA, how are you trying to connect the dots? And it's a reach trying to compare alcoholism to food, and that kept me sick, you know, until I too wound up being able to identify with this paragraph, you know, like having food wrappers all over inside my bed and on the floor, you know, things that just, you know, and being able to unwrap things in a matter of like a half a second, you know, and just fast and devour, eat and devour, eat. It was so insane. And finally, I could say, you know, and identify with this paragraph related to food. It took a lot of getting my contempt broken out of me to say, in this respect, I'm just like an alcoholic, you know, and I'm just like a drug addict. And I did, what happened with me was, it was no longer about, you know, for a long, many years coming in and out of OA was about vanity and looking good and image. And this trip around, it was about health. I couldn't breathe going up the stairs. And I came back this time no longer about vanity, looking good, losing some weight for the beach in the summer, you know. None of that anymore. It was about if I want to live or die, you know. And then I became teachable.
Time.
And, okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Victor. Victor V from, I think it was New York. Melinda H., you've got about a minute 20, so if you want to go ahead, or you're welcome to share next hour or at another time. It's entirely up to you.
Melinda H. from Virginia, and this story has always amused me, but then again, it's deadly serious, just like my disease. You know, multiple consequences of overeating, compulsive overeating, and none of those consequences, you know, having surgery multiple times on my belly, having feet and leg problems, and the worst of all is not having full capacity in my brain, you know, that I, when I'm in the food, I'm at least 30% less competent than I am when I'm abstinent. But none of those things were ever enough to make me stop. So it wasn't until I stopped trying to do it myself and started asking for help, first from other fellows and then from God, have I been able to get a little bit of abstinence. But it still is just for today. Just for today. Thank you.
Thank you, Melinda. Okay, thank you everyone who shared. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following the closing. The share ID for today, Thursday, August 8, 2024, 7 a.m. meeting, 21,641. That's 21641. We will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Martha Z., could you please go ahead and read A Vision for You?
Thank you, Amy. Good morning, my friends in recovery. This is Martha Z. I'm a compulsive overeater recovered by the grace of God from outside of Philadelphia. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until